We're here to talk about one subject, and that's coyotes. And we brought out wildlife biologist Scott Lindsay. He's inland fisheries and wildlife from the Gray office. He's been here before to talk about deer last year. We thank you so much for coming out, Scott. We're going to try and get Scott on the 8 o'clock boat. So we're going to try and stop this at 7:30 unless, you know, things are really rolling along. So let's try and let everybody who wants to talk, talk. Try and keep it brief to the point. And Scott will answer your questions as the best he can. And without any further delay, I'll give you the floor. I'm going to try and help with traffic control if there's a lot of hands up in the air, but we're going to let him answer all the questions.
All right. And let me see. I'll just speak from here if that's okay, and probably you wouldn't hear me if I was sitting down. But if you want, what I would suggest, I could give you just a very brief update on the status of coyotes in the state of Maine, what we have here for our eastern coyote, what we know about them, and I'll condense that down into less than 5 minutes. I think I can do it in 3 minutes. And then I really want to spend the rest of the time responding directly to your questions, whatever is most relevant to the coyote here on the island, or if there may be other animal involved as well. And I want to hear your concerns about it. And then I will certainly put together some recommendations, give you my best advice on things that we can do to address that. And I think we certainly do have some options here. So, and I want to get, the details. I'm aware of what happened. I mean, this largely I was invited here. This was precipitated by an event in which one dog was killed. I believe it was killed. And I got a call from Marjorie and said that there was some concern on the island from that, and asked if I'd come out and speak to the residents about that. So that's what I'm here for, is in direct response to that. So as far as coyotes, the animal that we have, the eastern coyote, is not a native. Geneticists may still argue this, depending on which university you talk to and what year it is and what new data has come out from the analysis of the DNA as they try to figure out the ancestry of this canid, which is now pretty much ubiquitous in the state of Maine. It is called the eastern coyote. It's believed, the best data at this point indicates that this animal probably was not native here. At one point, really up until probably the late 1800s, there was a wolf that lived in the northeastern United States and maritime provinces. It was a smaller variety of wolf than was found out west, but it was a wolf, and they differ socially from coyotes and physically in some regards as well. And when that wolf was largely extirpated, probably from over harvest, and it was a time when there was a lot of interest in killing really any type of predator. So there was a lot of, some predators were able to be killed fairly effectively, wolves, grizzly bears, mountain lions. Some like coyotes, they tried to kill them to a great extent throughout the country. And they had a lot of people working on it, and there was funding to do it. And the coyote was never really eliminated out west. So that coyote that was out west, since there was vacant land here now, an open niche, they do what coyotes do and many animals do. They expand their range. They started moving east, and gradually over time through the late 1800s, into the early 1900s, they started moving east. They started to show up in the Great Lakes states probably around the 1930s or so. They started showing up in Maine around 1950s is when you first started hearing reports of them. And at the time, they were called coy dogs. And it's possible there was some breeding with these wild animals and dogs at the time, when there was a shortage of available coyotes to breed with. But once the coyote population, wild population, became established, it's very unlikely that there's breeding that takes place between coyotes and dogs. They're considered enemies, and a coyote would try to displace a dog, unless the dog is much larger. In that case, it may go the other way around. So they don't really generally interact with each other, and it's unlikely they breed with each other. They tend to stay away from each other, or even get aggressive. So that coyote now is what has developed in the Northeast. It is a larger coyote than you find out west. If you go out to, you know, Arizona or something, you're going to find a much smaller coyote there. This coyote certainly does have some wolf DNA in it, and that likely was something it picked up on its range expansion coming east. It came through areas that were occupied by wolves in the Great Lakes states, and it resulted in a larger animal that was not just focused on feeding on voles and ground squirrels like they do out west, a little larger, more powerful, capable of taking down larger prey, including deer, and that's what kind of it's evolved to do. It's a very adaptable animal, and it's really occupies now most of really all of the Northeast and into Atlantic Canada. It's gone everywhere it can go, and I mean, if it could keep going, they would keep going and end up probably in Greenland from here if they eventually could find their way over. But at this point, they're fairly well populated here. We probably have about, estimate, maybe 15,000, maybe a little bit more of that in the state. We don't have any good data on population statistics for them. But based upon how much we know a home range is for coyote, that's, and you extrapolate that in the amount that we have in the state, that's what we have. So that's basically explains the animal we have here. It is something that, again, has been very well adapted to living in remote parts of the state, everywhere down into the cities. They're in Evergreen Cemetery, Kapisik Park in Portland. You can go into downtown Chicago, the outskirts of New York City, and even Manhattan itself, Phoenix, Los Angeles. I mean, all these places, they have coyotes that are living in fairly close proximity to people here, and they seem to adapt fairly well to that. So so it's something that we certainly do. They've certainly have found the island. They can travel around from one island to another. They can do that by swimming. So I guess at that point, that gives you a little bit about an explanation of what we have for coyotes. As far as our department and our position on coyotes, we do have a year-round hunting season on them. There is no bag limit. You can take an unlimited number of coyotes with a hunting license. There is a trapping season on them. There is, and that goes largely through the fall and into the winter. There's an early fox and coyote trapping season, which starts even as early as the middle of October, so coming up fairly soon. And there is also a night hunt that we have for coyotes, and that was recently lengthened as far as the season. And it now begins, I believe, December 16th and goes to the end of August. And again, there is no bag limit on that. So it's very, very liberal season on them. We're given plenty of opportunity for people to harvest coyotes. There is some value in the pelt for coyotes. The amount of demand and how many coyotes are harvested during that season is going to certainly be in response to what the world market is on fur. Somehow the western coyote seems to do a little better in the auctions than the eastern coyote does, but certainly there's still demand for that. And there are people that do trap them, hunt them, and shoot them largely over bait during night hunting. Very difficult animal to hunt by just stalking, by walking around. I think probably trapping and night hunting over bait are probably the most effective ways to kill them. So, and again, they're settled into a role where there's going to be positive attributes of them as well. I think we very easily can demonize everything that has sharp teeth, and you know, I generally don't do that. I work with predators and prey. I see them both. They both co-evolve with each other, or they always have. So, I don't believe we should be in a world where there's no predators at all, but it does mean that we certainly have to manage them, and I think that's something that's we can do through hunting and identifying when there are problem animals that are really causing a problem. Those are ones that we want to target, and there are others, coyotes that may be living on the island that really you may see running around. Sure, they may be visible to you, but they're not necessarily a threat to people and or pets. Whereas others, sometimes they seem to have more of a likelihood of doing that, of killing domestic livestock or pets. And on very rare occasions, extremely rare, they've been in contact with people and can occasionally have aggressive encounters with people, usually smaller people, not full adults. And often those are cases where those are coyotes that are more likely to be found in these more so urban areas where they've had some contact with people. Often people have kind of fed them for some time and they get kind of emboldened by that and a little conditioned to people. And those are the ones that are more likely to cause problems like that. But again, it's extremely rare, but it does happen on occasion as well. So I guess at that point, I'll open it up to specific questions that you'll have and do my best to answer them for you. Yes?
If the island wanted to, and let's say there were 50 coyotes now on the island, would it be feasible to get rid of all 50 coyotes?
I don't think so. No, I don't. I think that would be very, I think that would be difficult to do, and largely because you are not a closed system here, where let's say you were able to put pressure in to remove 50 coyotes, and it would be difficult to do, it would be time consuming to do, it would take a lot of effort to do so. You're not far from populations that are adjacent to you and nearby islands and peninsulas, and again, they really do find a way to get out and repopulate. So it would almost be like fixing if you had a leak in a boat and you had a hole in that boat, even if it was, unless if there's water coming out of it, even if it's a very small leak, I mean, eventually it's not going to do you much good, and it's going to fail. And it's the same thing here. I mean, you're not in a closed system. And if you have any coyotes left at all on there, it would be something that they certainly would maintain their population. They're very, very good at doing that, and others would find their way open. If there's available space on here, that's when others are gonna more likely to come. If it's packed with coyotes, then they're probably not gonna come. I would also say though, as far as your 50 coyotes, generally the concern that many people would have is that this population is just going to grow infinitely, and you're just going to have coyotes, and it's going to be this logarithmic growth, and you're going to have coyotes everywhere throughout town. I mean, yeah, 100 of them or more. Fortunate thing is that coyotes are canids. They are social animals. So they are only tolerant of other coyotes to some extent. Canids really do defend territory. They have a home range. And that home range can vary on whether they're in the Allagash or whether they're in Portland. It's likely based upon food availability, how much food is available to them. And if there's more food available in a particular area, then they're going to have a smaller area because it's easier to defend, say, 30 acres than 80 acres. Okay, so they can certainly have that very small range, and I'm saying as far as home range, I'm talking about that's around a den. But let's say in a very dense population of coyotes, they may have a home range of, let's say, 3 to 5 miles or something like that. In places where there's less prey, they may be, up to 12, 15 square miles, okay? So that's going to be something they defend, and it's going to be a family group, and within that, you're not going to keep growing that population. They're going to occupy that space. And that's based upon how much food is available there to feed those mouths that are in that family group. We're not talking about a pack like we are with wolves, that they can get a little larger, 10. I've seen packs of wolves out west that have been 15 animals, sometimes on occasion even a little bit more than that. Successive generations, sometimes even animals that are not directly related to them can be part of that pack. Coyotes is largely going to be an adult breeding pair, offspring from this year, generally, again, born in, you know, May or so, April, May. And then potentially you might have some offspring from the previous year, but often those get bumped out. So it's a fairly small family group, usually under six. Probably the mean number of coyotes in a family group in Maine is probably close to around four or so, something like that, I believe. So it's fairly small. When they sound like they're yipping, when they're howling, it sure sounds like there's a lot more than that. And I think the belief is they intentionally make themselves sound like there's a lot of them, because neighboring packs will also think there's more of them. And the benefit of that is they hear their neighbors making all this ruckus, and they're like, well, I guess we better just stay right here and respect those boundaries, which they are very good at marking with urine and scent glands. They walk this boundary, and just like a fence, just like we would perceive a fence, they have a fence, which we cannot see, but coyotes, given that their sense of smell is probably at least 100 times more acute than ours, they really do notice, and that's how they really do accumulate. That's how they communicate to each other. So when they do vocalize, though, that's the other second form of communication, and it helps if it sounds like there's a lot of them. They generally keep to their own territory. The animals don't want to fight. One family group probably is not interested in fighting with another one, because if they do, even if they win the fight, they're going to incur some damage, and they're going to incur some injuries. And wild animals can't really afford to do that. They can't afford to have, they can't afford to have a member of their family group with a bad leg or an injury to the mouth or something like that can't make a kill. It's just there's less value in that when they make their living by foraging. Hunter-gatherers, essentially, they really are. And feed a lot on vegetation, a lot on plants. But they can't afford that. So that's what I'm saying. Answer your question. It's very unlikely we get to that point, largely because they are density-dependent species. They are going to defend that territory, and that's going to be your built-in limit as to how many really you can have. So, yes.
When you say that the offspring from the previous year is likely to be bumped out, what do you mean? Where do they go?
Dispersal is something we see in many, well, pretty much all wildlife populations. See it in us, our population as well. I mean, your kid gets around 18 years old, and 19 years old, 20. Okay, it's time to move on. And the reason why they're moving on, because that's how they're going to make a living. They get more opportunity when they go do what they want, where they want to go. If they're living in with you all the time, then they're probably not going to advance themselves as much. So they got to go and do their own thing. Well, animals are going to do the same thing. If that coyote that is kind of analogous to a teenager from the previous year stays in that family group, what it sacrifices is ability to breed. It's going to be a non-breeder, because that mated pair, they're almost exclusively going to breed. Not to say there aren't some times that they sneak something in there. They have some, they call it extra pair copulations, and it does happen, where they'll violate the rules and they'll meet up. And most of the time, though, that's selected against. That is something that they really try to maintain. The dominant animals, supposedly going to have the best genes, are going to be the ones that are almost going to have exclusive mating for them in that territory. And if those other ones want to stick around, they can stick around, but they're not going to have a chance to breed. And most animals, although I'm not saying they're consciously thinking this, but most animals, their goal is to propagate their own genes into future generations. That's what they're built on. So they have to go somewhere else. And when they go, it's a risk. They may go 5 miles and go to a vacant territory next door if nothing's there. If they go there and there's another family group, they're going to be attacked potentially. So they may take off. They may swim off the island. They may say, I'm out of here. They're going to go. If they can't find a place to settle down where they can have food, water, shelter, and space, the four requirements for wildlife, if they can't have enough of that there, and if they're not going to have access to a coyote of the opposite sex, then they're probably going to leave. So that's what I'm talking about. Yes, they are bumped out. They generally do not stay there for successive generations. You see that in beaver fur as well. I was working on a beaver flowage earlier today, It's the same thing there. Those beaver, they don't stay long. In the springtime, it's one reason why if you're driving around, it's probably the only time of the year you're going to see roadkill beaver is in the spring, is because the kits have been born, and the offspring from the previous year say, okay, I'm in this wetland, now it's getting crowded, there's another three kits that were just born, I'm out of here, I want to get some space, I want to start their own colony somewhere. So they leave, they end up crossing a road, and so... Help me out again on the size of the island. About
2,000 acres.
Okay. So. Okay. So I would say that. I mean, I could see potentially in that area, given by what we know from radio telemetry animals that we've had in studies where we've actually done studies in Maine and done in many other states, so we have an idea of what their home range use is and the extent of their home range, I would say it's probably most likely that the island is really going to be limited to probably not more than three, maybe four family groups at most.
Yeah. I think even for us in our small community, that's a great concentration relative to our population of humans, mm-hmm. and it's impacting us a little greater than it would, say, on the mainland or in an urban area. So I think our concern is really just population control and how we can do that and what kind of...
Yes, and I would strongly advocate for that. And again, I think it's very, very important that you have people on island that will do that rather than relying on someone just... No, it's not. Transportation, but that ferry was very good coming back and forth. That was right on. I mean, it's very efficient. But at the same time, you're going to probably get fewer people that are going to come here specifically to trap coyote on the island. But if you have someone on the island who knows the people who live here, knows where they can go, where they're less likely to run into, you know, someone's dog that may be running around, that's where you could likely have someone set some foothold trap, so long as it's not in violation of any town ordinance. That would be a very effective way of doing it. Hunting would be another very effective way. Largely, probably your night hunting is going to be the best way to do that. Essentially, that's where you do set up a bait pile of generally meat scraps, probably best done over the winter, and you use... It takes a lot of patience. You can sit in a blind. You can use calls, different either electronic or manual calls that will attract a coyote to come in, and then you shoot them when they're approaching the bait. And again, not everyone necessarily has to be a huge advocate of the methods, but I will tell you in reality, is if you go out saying, well, I'm going to try to do it by just walking through the woods with my 12-gauge, you're going to have a very, very difficult time. You might get a nice walk. You'll get a lot of exercise. You'll probably lose about 30 pounds if you try to do it if you're hunting a coyote. But your chances of taking a coyote and certainly taking the number that would have any measurable impact is going to be very, it's not going to happen. So you have to employ those other methods.
Let's raise our hands and let him recognize you just so everybody gets a chance. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just saying, like, all of these require a license aside from if they're on your private property and they're disrupting your wildlife or
if
impeding
you,
your
they
property,
require a hunting license. Correct. You are correct. Under Title 12 law, if you are in your property and you're taking your dog out for a walk in the morning before you're getting ready to go to work, or you're out in your garden and a coyote comes close to you, if you feel threatened, or if your dog or your domestic animals are threatened by really any animal, you are allowed to kill it without a hunting license, and you just report it. You report it to our department afterwards. And particularly with deer. For coyotes, generally it's good for us to know in our regional office in Gray, just in case, at least we'll be aware that there is a problem or something like that is happening. But yes, there is a great deal of built-in ability through our laws for people to, if you see something that's coming after, yeah, you're not calling for permission. Can I go ahead and drop this coyote? No, go ahead and do it. You know why? Because it could be that particular coyote may just have a personality or temperament that's a little different, and it could be just the one that's more prone to come in and do that. And it could be other coyotes would never do that. They really vary. They vary in what they're going to do. So I would take an offender like that out. Now I would also say, just because you see a coyote walk through your backyard, that doesn't mean that it's doing something wrong. I wouldn't say, well, let's go ahead and get your gun and shoot the animals walking through your backyard. They're part of the Maine landscape now. They're always going to be. So don't expect that they're going to be eliminated. They haven't been able to do that since the early 1800s. And so it's not going to happen. So we've got to learn to live with them for an extent. And that's why we're also saying there's many things you can do to, you know, make sure that your contact with them is really going to be minimized. Most of the time, they're really not going to be a problem to you. Yes, ma'am. And I'm going to get to him first. I saw his saying was up for a while. I want to make sure. Yeah.
Thank you.
And then you're next.
We used to have a stable population of red fox here.
Yeah.
And it seems to have disappeared in the last several years. What, if any, part of that disappearance process do coyotes bear?
Quite possibly quite a significant impact. You're right. As based upon size, if you have a pecking order of canids and you have fox, coyote, and wolves, there are some places where all those species are what we call sympatric. They all live in the same geographic area. And in those areas, you got it. The wolves are going to displace the coyotes, and the coyotes are going to displace the fox. So in a place like we have here, where you have coyotes and red fox or gray fox, the coyotes are definitely going to be the dominant of those two, and they will displace the red fox. They'll either outright kill them, or they will cause them enough stress so that they just kind of leave on their own. So yes, they do actively displace red fox. And it kind of, it's like it goes up and down. When we see a lot of red fox around, like if my office, when I get a lot of calls, on years we get a lot of calls from red fox denning under my shed or denning out in the middle of a, there's a place in Naples and they sell, it's a massive place, they sell boats, and there's boats all over the place there. It's just a busy Route 302 there, and once I went, someone called about a fox, and there's a fox den right in the middle of all this activity. And I said, it doesn't look, I don't see a fox here. Then I see one poke its head right up, right in the middle of all this mess. It's like when they start showing up and there's a lot of them like that, and years when I get a lot of calls in on fox, we're making a pretty valid assumption that it could be the coyote population is down, because we definitely see them go up and down like that. So yes. Sure. Yes, ma'am. Question?
Well, I've heard them barking very loud and very close to my house, so I know I have a territory that's been marked.
Okay.
And I have a couple of cockapoos, which would be pretty tasty, I would imagine.
Yes.
And I'm not going to shoot the coyotes. I'm just like, look, yeah. I'm not going to shoot them. So it concerns me about walking in the woods now, and I don't take my dogs out for walks in the woods anymore. So I'm concerned about that. And I also think about what happens when the food supply changes, because right now there's a lot of food for these coyotes.
Mm-hmm.
But come winter and spring, there isn't going to be as much, and would their behavior change? So some of this is addressed to you, but some of it is as a citizen feeling differently about being in the woods, knowing that the coyotes.
Sure, no, I understand, and you're right. Some of it, whenever we have, I know sometimes when you're in the islands, you're in a little unique situation that you may not have. There may be times when you have not had predators out there, and sometimes you now have them, and it's a different. And there is an adjustment that has to be made, and it does not mean, like for instance, inland we have coyotes and bears. I mean, around my house. There's this sign around frequently, but by no means does that mean that I stay inside and I'm a hostage inside your house with your pet. Now, practical things you can do. I would not leave your smaller dogs are going to be more vulnerable than something like a Golden Retriever or a German Shepherd. They are. Small dogs, the reports I see, a lot of the unfortunate recipients are things like those Bichons, those little white dogs. I see a lot of stories. I don't know why it's specific to them, but that size dog is going to be very vulnerable. A larger dog is not something that it may be a little safer. But when you go out, just as long as you have the dog with you and the dog is not alone, I would not let the dog out, particularly I would not let a pet, a cat or a dog, out alone at night. Even open the door and saying, go out and do your business, come back. I mean, I just go outside, you know, with the dog. Things can happen very quick with predators, and sometimes what predators will do is they will kind of, if they're in an area that they think they must observe where to find things, and they look for patterns. And again, this is just based upon observations we've had of coyotes. You know, I'm not saying we can get into the mind and explain exactly what they're thinking, but we do know that they run in circuits, and they're extremely observant, and they will be very, very efficient at finding the largest number of calories they can with the least amount of work. Any animal does. So they're going to look for a pattern. If they see something out, they may hang around for a while. So don't leave the dog out, even if it's a brief amount of time. You're out with it. Make sure you have adequate lighting out there. If you're going to go through a walk to the woods, yeah, I would say, you know, if you don't feel comfortable even going like with a ski pole or something like that, but if something ever did come at you, you could certainly use it to thrust that, I mean, right into an animal's face. If that's not enough, you can always just get put it on your waist or your belt or something like that, some of that pepper spray. And that is very effective. I will tell you, when I worked out in Montana, when I worked in Glacier National Park, I was not allowed to carry a firearm. It was most of the jobs we've had, we can carry them. When I was in the national park, you can't. So we put those away. When we leave the national forest, we have that option. But once you're in the park, you put it away, and we are all provided with a can about this big of bear spray. And you would think, is that really going to do? What's that going to do if I get like a 500-pound grizzly bear who really doesn't want me there? And I go around a corner and I find elk kill and there's a bear looking right at me. Well, it does work. It works on a 500, 800-pound bear, and it's certainly going to work on a nasty domestic dog that could be around that's bothering people, and it's certainly going to work on a coyote as well. And those are, they last for a long time. It may be that you never use it. In fact, it's quite likely you would never use it. But it gives you some added security to have that. And so long as the wind is not blowing in your face like this, you know how it works. So test it before you use it so you see how it projects that spray. And if you target that animal's face, it gets into the mucous membranes in the nose, in the mouth, in the eyes, and that animal will stop. And you will have no problem with that animal. So that's an added thing you can do. So there are things that you can do. Also, you know, keeping attractants, that might be something that a coyote might be interested in. Largely food. I think most of us are pretty good. I don't see it as much. It used to be a problem in the past, but people seem to be pretty good about managing their garbage and trash. I don't see like food left outside in the open as much anymore. So I think people have gotten very good at that. But I would also say, you know, that's one reason why, you know, I'm not a big advocate of putting, sorry if there are a lot of birders in here. I like birds as well, but I don't put up bird feeders and largely, a lot of that is because you're attracting birds in. There's a lot of seed that falls down, and there's a lot of rodents that come in and feed on that as well. And sometimes that's going to draw other predators in that come in as well. So, you know, it's up to you whether you want to feed or not. Maybe that it never causes you a problem. But just, it's one thing that, it's just one more attractant that just causes the animals to be more interested in you. So does that answer your question? I mean, don't be a hostage to you. You certainly can go out. Whenever you're confronting an animal, again, you're going to act to be the dominant person. If that animal senses that you are frightened of it, and you're backing away and all this stuff, it senses that. And you're going to be, you're larger than they are, You're going to be loud. You're going to be aggressive. You're going to be strong. You're going to have whatever you have in your hand that you're going to present, make sure it sees that. And it's likely it's not going to advance on you.
Do they primarily, do the coyotes primarily hunt at night, or will they hunt 24 hours?
Good question. Yes. The quick answer to that is yes. Much more likely at night. They can kill, they can hunt at any time, but you're right. Much more frequently at night. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Do motion-activated lights around your property help?
I would think if anything, it's going to more so help you. You'll be in an advantage if you have visibility in your backyard. I don't think a coyote necessarily, if a light goes off, is going to do anything really to discourage it, though. Sounds, the same thing. I don't think different sound things tend to work too well. It might be one of those things that they respond to initially, and then they quickly learn that, well, a sound goes off, a light goes off, I'm not hurt by it, nothing bad happened to me. So it's a smart animal, and very quickly they learn it's not reason enough to change it. So, but I would say, absolutely, it's an advantage to you to have that visual field. It's a good, I mean, a lot of people, police will tell you, you know, for safety around your house, and there's certainly some benefits from people in the house and perhaps discouraging other people from coming close. It's the same thing. It kind of gives you some advantage, but it's not going to be something that's going to repel coyotes. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
First of all, I'd like to say we've lost about 10 cats on the island in the last few months, including one of ours. And it's also getting darker earlier, so yes. 4 o'clock is by the time I try to get our cats in. But I had another comment is that I don't want to see us do using traps, leg traps and things like that on the island. I hope that doesn't come to fruition.
It's not up to me. It's up to the residents on the island and whether there's an ordinance dictating that.
That's just my opinion. But anyways, I was curious about birth control. I mean, I'm all for dealing with them at night and shooting them now. But anyways, I'm wondering about birth control. Is the possibility of getting birth control to them regularly so that they're not reproducing?
No, it's certainly been an option that's been brought up for many, many years. It's been brought up for deer as well. And it's just in no place that it has been done successfully, unless you're in a place like Matinicus Island and you're 12 miles off the coast or something like that. You're in a really more in a closed system.
We're pretty enclosed.
What's that?
We're pretty enclosed. We've never had them here until last.
Well, you're close enough to other land though, and the distance between you and other land is definitely no barrier. Right.
They were on the mainland for 15 years or more, and we didn't have them here.
Yeah.
Yep.
You say if we get rid of them, they're going to come right back. I don't believe that.
Well, I do.
Are they getting overpopulated on the mainland? Sorry to interrupt. Are they getting overpopulated over there? That's why they're coming here?
No, I wouldn't say overpopulated, but they're just always, there'd be always any places.
Most people here would say if we get rid of them, they're going to have a hard time getting back.
Yep. Well, you can certainly, it's certainly something that if in the island, if they decide they don't want them, I mean, you can certainly direct some pressure into either trapping or hunting. But, birth control, contraceptives and coyotes does not a feasible thing to do, largely because, other animals come in. It's often cost prohibitive to do. It just has not worked any place that it's been tried. So it's something, it's an option that has been brought up, but in actual practice, there's no evidence to indicate that it's going to be successful at all. Yes, way in the back. Benefits? Oh, sure. I mean, they're a part of Maine wildlife now, and they're going to feed on small mammals. That can certainly be a benefit if you're dealing with an island with, in any place along the coastal plain where Lyme's disease and even other tick-borne diseases, probably even more concerning than Lyme disease, are prevalent. If you can lower your small rodent population, that is going to be something that could be benefit because they play a role in the life cycle of the tick that carries Lyme's disease. So that's a that is a benefit. They will kill deer as well. As I said earlier, they're capable of killing adult deer, more likely to kill younger deer, unless you're in a winter situation where they're confined in the winter, which you're not going to have here. So they will kill deer and, you know, provide some control for that year-round. Most of the time, I'd say the coyote predation on deer is going to be is going to peak around in the spring and early summer, and then in the winter, and kind of those two periods. And in between, they may have very little, if any, of that. And they're really remarkable in that they can totally shift their diet to predominantly vegetation, even certain times of the year, and can subsist on that for quite some time, too. So very adaptable. But yeah, they're certainly part of the ecosystem here. Yes, sir?
What's the life expectancy?
In captivity, like, for instance, well, I'll tell you that first, and then you report more in the wild. But in captivity, we do have some at the Maine Wildlife Park, and I believe their life expectancy there tends to be, they tend probably top out at maybe up to 13 years old, 15 years old. In the wild, they have much higher mortality rates in the wild. In fact, out of every litter, most of the populations that have been studied, it would not be unusual to have 30 to 40% of the litter die annually, and probably over 50% die before they reach breeding age. So I would say a wild coyote, though, life expectancy would probably be, they'd be fortunate if they got to, 8 years old. 5 to 8 years old would be considered a fairly old coyote. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am.
We didn't have foxes here until after World War II, and we had some heavy icy winters, and we had had the icy winters before that, and they came on the ice. Hmm. We had an icy winter 3 or 4 years ago, and it froze almost to the point that the boat was impacted.
Hmm. Yeah.
And all of a sudden after that, people started to see coyotes, or hear coyotes, or think there were coyotes, or find them on their game cams, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. And is it possible that our population came on the ice? And if they did, and we don't have another icy winter, and we try to eliminate them, could that be, could that be part of this equation?
I think it's less likely they came. I think it's less likely there was going to be solid ice that they'd really be more likely to travel on, if it's any broken at all. I mean, it really wouldn't
be.
It was
a cross in some places.
Yeah. I would make it easier for them, sure. If there's less that they would have to swim, that'd probably be easier for them to walk than to swim. You want a good example of the role of something like that? Look at wolves in Isle Royale on Lake Superior, and you'll see what happens when they had years where Lake Superior actually froze, and they had wolves that traveled from mainland to Isle Royale, which is a fairly isolated island in the middle of the lake and otherwise inaccessible largely to many of those animals. So yes, there are certain events like that that may make it easier for animals to travel, but they're not going to be stopped by the distance you are from land now. And also, wintertime is probably not going to be the peak time where they're going to be dispersing anyway and traveling. Most of them are going to be in their home ranges, in their family groups, preparing for during breeding season. They tend to stay fairly localized. It's just later in the spring is when they're more likely to bump out, expand their range, and look for other places that they could live.
And our fox population disappeared before the coyotes. The thought was people started seeing sick foxes around.
Yeah, absolutely, could be.
And that basically they wiped themselves
out. Yep, they do that. They get distemper and get rabies, and once they contract those diseases, once it's symptomatic for them, it usually means that death is fairly imminent, usually within a couple weeks or so. So often those animals can die fairly quickly in an area, and yeah, they can depopulate an area, and then they'll recover. They'll eventually find their way over to the island again.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Let me see. Who haven't I heard from? Yes, sir. Right up front.
Do they attack? We have a little dog, little Yorkie, and on the mainland all the time, has to be leashed. Mm-hmm. So when we bring her to Shebaig, until now, we let her off the leash on our property. But I'm deciding tonight, you know, to keep her. Are they known to have attacked pets on a leash, you know, with a human with them, or is that a pretty good deterrent?
Yeah, I'll tell you, there's, I'd say it's definitely a better deterrent to have a person there, and assuming you are also just standing right up to it, that's how animals communicate with each other as well, and if we kind of do the same thing, I'm not telling you to go out and chase it and try to grab it, and try to grab it, you know, do that, you don't want to avoid contact with the animal, if at all possible, unless it tries to attack you, and then all conditions are gone, you do whatever you have to do to get the animal to stop attacking you. But if you can, often you can intimidate that animal by acting like a large person, and that can help you. I have heard, though, there have been occasions where coyotes come up and it seems to get so focused on that dog that it doesn't even seem to pay attention to the person holding the leash. And then what happens inevitably is the person goes down, tries to grab their dog, pick it up, and they're going to get bitten. Even if that coyote wasn't necessarily targeting that person, they just get locked onto it, and they just go for it. And that's a situation where, you know, if that animal's coming, it's coming right at you, you don't want to get it to the, you don't want to get to that point where you're going to be, you know, holding that animal and having that coyote potentially on you. So it's something, it's hard to write a rule book on it, but just your awareness of it is important. Having it on a leash is important, maybe, and potentially having something on you is also a good idea. But again, a lot of that is talking about this. I don't want everyone to leave here tonight thinking, you know, you've got your island, you're used to walking around, you go for a walk around at night. I don't want people to think, well, I can't go, I'm not comfortable walking around at all now. I don't want to do this. It always helps to walk with someone else, of course. It's nice to do that, but you know, even if you go out by alone, so long as you have your kind of awareness, and you know, I wouldn't, you know, go out and you have your earbuds in or something, you're maybe not just paying as attention, you walk along with your dog, and you don't notice that something may be around. So just try to pay attention, and most of the time, there's not going to be problems. But I think it's important that everyone here is, at least knows that there may be coyotes, there certainly may be fisher. Fisher is another animal. It's a mustelid, a member of the weasel family. It can get up probably about this long. Males are about twice the size of females. Very formidable predator. It's a solitary animal. And they certainly can kill things that are larger than themselves. Fisher are found throughout the coast now. I think they've expanded their range a little bit down into the coastal plain. I've seen just about every town. Fortunately, since people have out so many game cams now, they send me pictures. So I'm able to see all these animals and where they're showing up in place. So I think they've expanded their range a little bit. Or it could be that people just have more cameras out now and they were there and you just didn't see them. So that's always something that could be another issue. It's not just coyotes. And also the other thing I wanted to say is, please don't just assume that every time an animal or a pet is missing. I really feel bad for any time anyone loses a pet. I mean, I've had them myself, and well, I'm not minimizing it at all. Yeah. I think it's terrible to lose something.
I'm hoping that she got gone by a coyote rather than be stuck in a trap someplace.
Well, yeah, that's less
fast.
Right, that's less likely. Well, yeah, it's always possible, but still, it's less likely. I'd say we know, and the data really supports us that a cat in particular has a life expectancy. If it's an indoor cat, has a life expectancy of at least twice that of an outdoor cat. I know outdoor cats probably have a lot of fun, and they're not inside looking out the window all the time, and it can be kind of boring, I guess. But there's a lot of potential hazards for them out there. Other domestic ones as well, cars, there's birds of prey, owls at night, they're going to feed on them. They can pick up cats and kill them. So there's a lot of things that can happen to them, and they also kill a lot of wildlife when they're out and about. Cats do. So they kill a lot of birds, a lot of small mammals. So there's a lot of reasons why it's best, you know, for wildlife in general and for your cat to keep it inside. And if it's out, yeah, it's going to...
I think she was out underneath the bird feeder going after the mice.
Okay. Yep.
When the coyote came by. No, I don't know.
Right. Yep. Let me see. Yes. Question. Yes.
A couple of silly ones and a couple of serious ones. The serious ones are, what are the chances that, I know that there's rabies and raccoons on the mainland fairly close to us. This late this summer, people have been reporting it. Mm-hmm. What are the chances that the coyotes are also rabid or likely to become rabid? That one seems to me worrying.
Possible. Any mammal can have rabies. In fact, I'll tell you, this is a first. After more than 20 years working in this department and all the samples we've collected of rabies samples, this is the first time I had another one that was brought in by an animal damage control control officer from one of the towns, maybe Yarmouth, I believe. And they brought me a little box, and this was an animal that we have to take at that point, and we transported up to the Health and Environmental Testing Lab in Augusta, where it's tested to determine whether it has rabies or not. And this one, I had a double take when I looked at the data sheet on it. You know, it tells what the level of contact was, what it was. And this was a mole. It's a mammal. A kid picked it up, and he was bitten by the mole. And you might dismiss that, and it's quite likely it is going to come back negative. But nonetheless, there was contact made between that mammal and it broke the skin of this boy. And certainly our protocol says that it's going to be tested. And that's what happens. So any mammal potentially can get it. Although coyotes, I can tell you, I don't think we've had any positive coyotes in a number of years. But every year there's a compilation of all the animals that are submitted to the Health and Environmental Testing Lab in Augusta. And I do pay attention to, as those go through monthly, I look and see what animals are showing up on that geographically, where they are, and just so I know. And probably every few years, maybe 5, 6 or so, I may see a coyote that's a positive. So it's always potential, but still, skunk, raccoon, fox, and bats are going to be the four that 96% of animals that are tested positive, doesn't mean that are in the population, but that are tested positive, that have had contact with people or pets, are going to be those four. So yes, it's potential, yes, but by no means are we assuming that it's going to be rabies. But if anyone had contact with an animal, if it seemed to be particularly aggressive towards you, showing signs of rabies, either that or extremely lethargic and kind of lying down in a circle in your driveway and it's not doing anything, kind of lifting its head up like this, just doesn't look right. Yeah, that would be something that I would say it's probably best to kill that animal. And if it has not had contact with someone, then it would be disposed of. It can be buried. If it has had contact with a person or pet, then yeah, we would say after it's killed, we would have a sample of that sent to the lab to determine if it was positive or not. Yes. Did you have a quick follow-up to that? I'm sorry, did you have a second part?
It's not a follow-up. It's a separate question.
Okay, I'll let you do your two. Yes, go for
it. The silly one is, by any happy chance, do they like to eat turkeys?
Oh, that's a good one. And I'll tell you, I can answer that based upon actual real data that we've collected. Over the past few winters, we trap turkeys every winter with a rocket net, and I put radio telemetry tags on them, and we have several study sites within the state of Maine now. It's a very very good comprehensive study on turkeys, and a lot of this has been in response to potential issues on agricultural impact on agricultural areas, and there's other things as well, but there's a good reason to get as much information as we can about turkeys. And some of the information we get is what happens to them after I'm tagged them and I've released them and they're flying away. And I see they're flying away fine. That's all I got to do. After that, we'll go in with or I'll have someone else go in and do it. It's kind of a fun thing to do, but someone will check on the location of that with a handheld receiver. And we'll be able to determine if that animal's alive or dead. And if it's dead, we walk in on it. And we're able to do a basic field necropsy just based upon certain features which tell us if that animal was predated upon, whether it died of natural causes, whether it was hit by a car, whether it was killed by an owl versus a bobcat. And what we have found is most of the turkeys that have been killed during in our study site have been coyote predation, caused by coyotes. I was expecting more of bobcat. I thought bobcat would be better suited to kill turkeys, and I do think they are quite suited to it. But coyotes have been the ones that have been most responsible for it. They, I mean, their tracks are present right there, the scats are present right there. And the bird has obviously had some indications it was in a killed in a traumatic event, so we can determine that it was killed by that coyote. So yes, they do like turkeys. They will kill them.
They're
yes.
Going to be very happy here on Shebeg.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We have lots of turkeys.
I see. Yeah.
We used to have lots of turkeys.
We used to.
They will definitely feed on them. Yes. 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 I'm sorry. We have questions.
Yeah. I'm curious. What can or should we as a Board of Selectmen be doing about this problem?
Probably what I would suggest is, and again, speaking with Marjorie earlier, I think we had the thought of maybe putting something in print that might be good for people to have a good percentage of the population is here, but there's a lot of people who aren't. So maybe we can work on something to just as awareness that people will know that there are coyotes out there and things you can do to minimize your impact. That's always a good approach. The outreach is a big part of it. The second thing would be to make sure that there are that you can do whatever you can to have places that can be hunted and/or trapped, if individual residents are okay with that, and assume it's okay with the town. Again, I'll tell you, trapping is. I've trapped coyotes before. I've trapped plenty of other things, and I can tell you, just don't assume that all hell's going to break loose if there are traps out there. It really isn't. I mean, we're checking them frequently. They're designed now so that. They're not killing an animal when you're capturing it. If you do catch a coyote, I mean, it's called a leg hold, but really it's actually a foothold, and they're designed to actually do minimal damage to an animal.
Their feet off?
No. No. There's times when that has happened, and some animals like raccoons can tend to get pretty frustrated, I think, when they're in a trap. So there are different traps now to accommodate that, knowing what their behavior is. But I have never seen a coyote chew in its hand. And often when I release a trap, I mean, there's often just very little even sign of blood. I mean, there's going to be maybe some from if the skin's broken. I'm not dealing with broken bones. If the animal is being released, we watch it. If we catch it as a non-target, like if I'm in trapping for something else and a coyote gets in there, then I'll go and let it loose, and it runs away fine. It's looking back like this as it's running away fine, saying, "Oh boy, I made it, lucked out today." But they're really good, and they're very targeted. And the thing about a trap is it's working 24/7. I think when you're hunting, and I hope you do, and it's something that's very, very important. It's a good way to get coyotes. But there are times when it takes a lot of time, takes a lot of patience. There's times when you're sitting out in the blind, and there's times when you're doing that, and it's kind of cold, and it's kind of nice to do. It's probably maybe somebody's only quiet time of their whole day is sitting in the blind. But it is something that you're either there, or you're home, or you're at work, and there's no management taking place. With a trap, it's there all the time. So long as you're in a place where you know where it is, or people know that where it is there, and I wouldn't put it in a place like if you have a town-owned land, and if it's a park, and there's a trail that people are walking through, a land trust trail, and I wouldn't put a trap, say, "Oh, this is a great place to put a trap. I can check this trap line easily every day." I mean, common sense. You're going to put it in certain places where you think a coyote's going to go. You have to think of where you're going to set that so that pan is going to be exactly where that animal is going to put his foot down. And that's a tough thing to do. And that's what a trapper can kind of can do that. They know their animal well. But you're also, no trapper wants to put in a place where it's going to cause a problem, or it's going to catch a dog. If you did catch a dog, dogs have been caught. We have bird dogs occasionally that are caught in traps. It's happened the same time we have fox and coyote trapping season. And yeah, they're easily released, and dogs really don't have a problem. So it can happen, but it's don't dismiss trapping. It's very good. Don't think of it these big steel-toothed traps that are holding something in and causing a great deal of pain. They really don't have those. The whole market has changed on that. Yes. Yes, back here, sir. And that, oh, go ahead. Okay. I'm not keeping old. I'm not. I need someone to choose and form. Okay, go ahead.
The adult deer ticks are going to be coming out in 2 to 3 weeks. And they're looking for a warm-blooded mammal to feed on. And I guarantee you they will be feeding on the coyotes on this island. And every single adult deer tick that feeds on a coyote, a female will drop off. She can lay a couple thousand eggs. So the net effect of coyotes on Lyme disease, yes, I agree. The coyotes have decimated our mouse population, which is a nice thing. And yes, I agree, they've probably taken some fawns and some weak deer. But if we have a dozen or two dozen coyotes out during adult tick season, I guarantee you our tick population is going way up, as well as the dog tick population, which already everyone was complaining about how many dog ticks we had this spring. So those coyotes are feeding the ticks on this island.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, in particular, I mean, dog ticks would certainly find them. But again, we're not dealing with a large number of animals. There's ticks are out in the landscape, and there's certainly things you can do to minimize them. But I don't think having coyotes out at a population which I expect to have here. Again, I haven't walked through extensively on it. This is not based upon a survey. Very difficult to do an assessment for the number of coyotes. It's largely going to be based upon just how much we know area that they tend to cover and how frequently people are seeing them. So certainly, I mean, there's going to be, to people, probably negatives and benefits to some species of wildlife, and coyotes is going to be one of them. But I still think overall, I wouldn't say it is necessarily a negative thing to have them on the island. I wouldn't expect that they're going to grow to a point where it's going to develop into a problem. So long as you're fortunate to be on an island that you have so much space, so much wooded space, undeveloped land, places that the coyotes can reside, they often do quite fine there, and they don't have to be in someone's backyard all the time. And also, another thing all that space does is it provides ample opportunity for people to go and safely hunt them or trap them. So that's some definite positives that you have going for you. Yes, sir?
You said there's open season on coyotes. Is there open season on fishers as well?
No, there isn't. No, there's no hunting season on fisher. There is a trapping season on them, though. And that's largely our, a winter trapping season on fisher, yes. And they can be, they're certainly something that can be fairly easy to trap. Yeah. There are some restrictions, and largely because of lynx issues that we have, even though you are far removed from lynx populations, there's trap setting requirements that affects how you can set a trap for lynx. So that would have to be complied with. But there are many people that do still trap for fisher. They can be caught. And fisher are even, since they're solitary animals, they're occurring at an even lower density than coyotes. And they have a fairly large home range. So fisher is something that they certainly can be trapped. And as far as what people are hearing, you're hearing the yip howling, like the, I can't do it, I don't have that high enough voice, but I can do it if I really make it loud, but I'm not going to do it in here. But you're hearing the yip howling, that's the sound you're hearing, but there's also a sound that comes from fisher, and probably the best thing to do, everyone probably has it on their phones, they can look up vocalization of a fisher and you'll hear it. And it's kind of a real screechy sound, and that's another thing that some people sometimes you can hear them as well. You may never see one, They are truly, I mean, phantoms in the woods. Some people can go their whole life without ever seeing a fisher, but they may be out there, and that would be another animal certainly that can potentially, you know, take a pet. In the back, way in the back, yes.
Would a habitat trap work on coyotes?
You know what? I would say very difficult to do that. There are places where researchers have no option other than using box traps like that, and largely there's someone, I believe they're doing that in either Chicago or Detroit. There's a study that's been going on there, and they've had to trap and tag coyotes just to see how they're living in an urban environment like that, and they've been catching them in box traps, but it's very difficult to do. Must have some visual attractant in there, like feathers, something in there like feathers that would draw them in, but it's very difficult to get them into a box trap. They don't like going into a confining trap. Yes?
Do other islands around Casco Bay have coyote problems? Long Island?
I haven't heard of problems from them, no. I've heard of fox showing up on the islands, but I have not heard of necessarily problems with coyotes. Doesn't mean they're not there. It doesn't mean someone's observed them and just hasn't really said anything about them, because it's just not considered really that big of a deal. But no, I don't think I've ever gotten any other calls on the Casco Bay from people that believe that perceive that there's a problem in the coyotes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
And then you're
okay. That's okay. Go ahead. You're already going. I'm already starting.
And when you've trapped a coyote, what do you do with it?
Well, it all depends. If I trap it, and if my goal is to trap it for management to remove it, then I'd shoot it. Yeah. Generally, shoot it in the head, and then you can either, at that point you'd either take the fur from it. You would you'd probably take the animal. You'd skin it. You would tan the fur, and you would sell it at an auction. Probably get about $25, sometimes $35. Make something out of it. You know what coyote fur is used for now? I said, overall markets for fur have kind of gone down in many places. Like in New York City, it used to be, well, you go down there, there's a place called the Garment District. You'd go down and it'd be just all this. You'd see furs and everything, and it was a big deal. All these companies, these big furriers would be there. I think they might even have some new law there now where they're not even selling them anymore. Still, the markets, still used in Canada. You go up into Canada, you go up to Quebec, anyone who's been to Winter Carnival in Quebec City knows, there's plenty of furs. They're not fake furs, they're real furs, and they are warm, they work, and they have no problem using them. So they're there. Europe is still used. Probably a lot of the markets for fur, though, yeah, is still China. China's buying a lot of furs. But as far as the coyote, specific to coyote, that is highly sought after as trim for these winter parkas. There's some companies in Canada that produce these, that make these winter parkas, and they're nice. They're pretty pricey items, but it lasts a lifetime pretty much, and you can probably go to the North Pole in it, and it has you've seen the fur rough around the hood, and around the cuffs usually, and sometimes down around the waist, and that's good because generally, when you're perspiring, in those areas, it doesn't get all soggy. That fur is just so good at kind of repelling the moisture that it doesn't like perspire. You don't perspire and then it freezes up on there. It's good for a trim. So that's kind of what it's being marketed for now. That's probably the primary market rather than the full fur coats that are becoming less and less prevalent now. So there's still some demand for it, yes.
And how big are the litters?
Yeah, I'd say I probably average in between probably in between 3 and 4. And again, they don't all live. In fact, it would be unusual if they all did live. They usually have some mortality. Yes. And who else? You're next, ma'am.
They just stand in the woods or in fields.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yep. I've seen them den. Many times you could walk right by the den, unless you were specifically looking for it, you may just walk right by it. There can be very nondescript. Sometimes you will see, they're going to build a den where they can dig well. So generally, sandy soils are very good. If you've got real rocky soils where you are, or a lot of roots, that might be more difficult for them. So generally, if they can get up kind of on a little rise where there may be some sand gravel pits, where many gravel pits, courtesy of the glaciers here in Maine, and all those places that were, all that sand and gravel was dropped by the glacier, that just gives perfect places for these coyotes to den. But generally dig a hole, and they'll probably go in there. It'll be just narrow enough for them to get through. I mean, a person wouldn't even be able to get it in there. And it probably is going to be, nothing more than a den, maybe no more than, 6 to 10 feet in length, and maybe have a little bit of a irregular shape in it as far as the ones I've seen. And, they're fairly stable temperature in there. And the thing you may notice is on the exterior of the den, you may see a little kicked up sand around it, similar as with a fox den. And you may also see some bones in there because they do keep pretty clean. They don't make a mess inside when they're done eating, when they're bringing the food in for the pups to eat. They seem to eat it outside. They generally, most animals aren't going to bring it right into their denning areas because it promotes ectoparasites and everything. So they keep it pretty clean in there, and you may just find some bones on the outside of that den. Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Well, could they make a mess of a septic system then?
Excuse me?
Could they make a mess of a septic system?
I would suspect that they would probably not try to dig in places where there is a lot of resistance like that. Right. I would think like a weeping willow tree would be a lot more of a worry to me around a septic system than coyotes. I don't think they'd really mess around with that. They'd stay away from that. Yes. Your question.
Yeah. What is the message, thinking of what you and Marjorie will be developing, that everybody should be giving children who take their dogs out for a walk? Our kids on Shebig do that year-round, but we also have a lot of people who come and rent houses, and they come with children, and they send them off with the dog on the leash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, it's difficult because I can never totally predict what an animal will do. I can tell you it's very unusual for them to come into contact with people, but I can't totally dismiss the fact that potentially if a 6-year-old kid is walking down the road with a small dog, that a coyote could come out and have physical contact with the dog and or the kid. So I mean there's certainly things that can happen that I can't predict just by having wild animals on the island. But I would just say, so long as they know that when they're dealing with a coyote, able to make a distinction between a coyote and a domestic dog, I think sometimes if people are not used to being around wildlife, they see a coyote and they kind of equate that with a domestic dog. And that can be a problem if they're coming up and trying to initiate contact with. Again, most of the time that coyote's going to be gone. But they should still be aware that it's out there. And as far as something in print, I mean, we don't have anything written at this point, but it would be very similar to what we've discussed already, awareness of what a coyote is, things you can do to minimize having them on your property, simple things that we talked about even with your deer issue, minimizing the brushy areas around your house so you have better visibility. And a coyote, which tends to be a little bit more of a furtive animal, it likes to come up when he's got some cover. If it's all open, maybe less likely to get himself out in the open when they're going to be more vulnerable. So these brushy areas, I mean, you can go through and kind of clear those out. Things like that are good. And then, what to do if you do see a coyote. Know that it's not something that is necessarily reason for panic. That most of the time it's going to just try to keep its distance from you. But if it did try to initiate contact with you, certainly there's things that you can do and have on you that in response to that, which would, I think, would be good to know. Yes.
Thank you.
Isn't that the kind of thing you always should
Let's let Jane. Let's let Jane ask a question. She hasn't spoken yet.
Okay. Yep.
I just want to make a. I guess I don't really have a question. I want to make some observations. First of all, this is a huge crowd for a selectman. So I'm going to think there's a reason there are people here. And I know I'm not a happy camper sitting back here. I came in thinking coyotes don't really mess with humans. You know, I'm sitting back here, and all of a sudden it looks like they might be. And that's not a happy thought, because I do walk by myself quite a bit, and I know other people are concerned about that. The reason I'm here is because I want the coyotes gone. I don't want to live with them. I don't care what the lifestyle is. I want them gone. And I'd like to ask the select people to do whatever they can to get as many as I can off the island. I mean, you wouldn't have a problem like this if that wasn't what
you want.
I really think that's why most
everybody
is here.
Okay, let me handle
that. Short of us getting guns and going out and taking advantage of the hunting season, there's not that much we can do. I will ask you, though, Are there prescribed kills like there are in some other islands with deers? Could that be done with, like a special hunting license with you bringing a sharpshooter? And we all heard what you said, that it probably wouldn't be effective. It's like shooting the bittersweet out of your yard. It's in the neighbor's yard. It's going to be back in very soon. But is that happening anywhere? Has that happened where?
Not with coyotes, no. The only thing analogous to that has been some stepped up trapping around deer wintering areas, and those people are compensated for doing that. As far as places where there are coyotes that are in normally living, which they do again statewide, there's no efforts I'm aware of where there's. Where there's going to be a whole lot of interest for the public to come and do sharpshooting for them. I think it really is something that all you really need is a few people on the island that are familiar with the island, that maybe have collectively between them enough time to put some time out in the field and strategically put some baits out, get some traps out, and try to exert some pressure on them. By no means, again, my goal is, I know there was some incidents that can happen from coyotes, and I understand what happened here a few weeks ago. These do happen, I mean, throughout the state, I'm sure. There's different places where it happens. It's nothing different. So these animals are part of the landscape. You certainly don't need to roll over if they're having problems. There are plenty of means in place to control them. It all depends, though. Someone does have to do that, and I think if we find someone on the island that can do that, that can help you out a lot. And I don't think that it's really going to be necessary to have an expectation that you're removing every coyote from the island. Certainly you can if you want. There's nothing saying you can't, but I don't know if that's really a reasonable goal to expect.
Okay. So we can discuss that at a separate time, what our options are and what the board may or may not want to do. But it's basically going to be encouragement, I think. And I don't think we're going to proactively go out and do anything. But we can take it up in another meeting. And the evidence here is that people want us to talk about it. So we will talk about it. But I'm not sure what the options are to doing it.
Can I ask Scott a question?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Scott, my father-in-law grew up in Buckfield, Maine, and they had chicken houses and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And when he was a kid, he made a lot of money killing porcupines. And they, because the town gave a bounty if you took in a porcupine
okay.
nose.
Yes, I recall
and
that. Yep.
I didn't know if there are any towns that have bounties on that would be an incentive in addition to the trapping.
No, they've tried bounties for 170 years, and they really have not been successful. I mean, there have been enough trapping and hunting pressure where that certainly reduced populations, but not that it has been directly linked to bounties. I can tell you that there have been some local, well, not local to here, but largely in Washington County, there was a local fish and game club, I believe, that sponsored an annual coyote derby where there was a kind of like when you go to Sebago Lake and you have a fishing derby and there's prizes for that. They offered prizes for the largest female, the largest individual, the highest number of animals. And that was something that was probably the closest would get to kind of a financial incentive for doing it. But again, that was something that happened in an area where there's a lot of interest in coyote hunting, and even that wasn't was very short-lived. It didn't last. No, I can't tell you there's any real precedent for any positive impact from bounties. It really is. Everything is in place. There's extended seasons open for them, and there's no magic bullet for managing coyotes. You can have people out there to trap them, to hunt them. And I think it would get to the point where, I mean, it would be something that may be here. It may fizzle out on its own, certainly. I mean, on an island, it's not the same as being on a mainland where you constantly have immigration out of these areas. You are a little bit more removed, so it certainly could be something that, you know, maybe for a time, population will go down. Maybe it will come back again. They usually will. But it may be something that's going to be quite sustainable to have some, you know, limited number of coyotes on here, combined with just being a little vigilant about having the animal around. And I think you'd find that it really should not be a major change in your lifestyle having them here. I mean, I'm that's what I'm here for. I'm just here to see what you want to do. But, and you know, you're the ones here all the time. I mean, I'm used to kind of having them around, and it really hasn't changed my life all that much. But you know, there are options, and again, I can certainly help for ways to step up opportunities for people to harvest them.
So what I'd like to do is, we're trying to get them on the 8 o'clock boat. But what I'd like to see is a show of hands who haven't yet asked a question, who would like to ask a question of Scott. 1, 2, 3, 4. Very manageable. You've already asked a question.
So start right up here front. We'll
yeah, can I see those hands again up nice and high?
Keep those hands up, okay. And I'll make sure we're...
1, 2, 3, 4. Okay.
Okay.
Go.
All right, so I'm just curious because, you know, there's a lot of stuff, information out there that may not be true on the internet and stuff and about coyotes, and you had talked about how they manage their territory fairly well. Mm-hmm. So if we start killing coyotes... and they want to manage their territory, and they're down some numbers. Does that mean that they might breed more, actually, to get those numbers back up?
Yeah, that's a good point, and that is based upon some research that was done down in Texas, and they did find that they compared populations that were in a preserve that did not have hunting pressure on it, and compared that, and that was the control group, and that was the experimental group, and then the control group was the one that had hunting pressure on it. And so they compared both of those, and they did find that the ones that were in the preserve that were certainly somewhat isolated from other populations in that particular location, they found that they did have more offspring in their litters. And kind of the conclusion was that the female, in her estrous cycle, she is responding somehow to that lowering of the population in these hunted populations. More are being taken out, and somehow she's responding to that and compensating for that by having, say, 10 pups in a litter versus 7 or 8. And that's certainly something that... can be seen. More likely, though, what is happening there is if you remove animals from a population, harvest them from a population, the coyotes that are remaining, think of it, is they're going to have a larger share of the resources that are there now. They're not They're not competing with as many other coyotes. So they have more food, more space, less stress. So they may have still an average of, let's say out there in that particular population, it was, let's say it was six, let's say it was seven pups. In the, since there's no competition, maybe six or even seven of those pups may survive. In places that there's a higher population of coyotes because it's a preserve, there's no hunting, there's a lot more competition, out of those seven pups that that female had, it could be resources were constraining to a point where three of them died, there may be only five of them that were living. So it's not necessarily that the overall litter size long-term is going to increase as some sort of self-regulating mechanism to bump it up. It really is, I think, more of a situation where you take animals out of a population, those animals that remain are going to do better than the ones that have more competition. So that's certainly something that is happening. And founding populations, and that's part of population biology too, because when an animal is going into an area that previously was unexploited and may be vacant, it's to that animal's advantage and the species' advantage to propagate more and to fill those available niches quicker. So they can, again, they're just colonizing that area, so they're going to do that. But once they coyotes become settled in an area, I think you find that really does seem to stabilize, and it kind of goes down into a level that is commensurate with the carrying capacity of that land, the amount of food that can be there. So that's the question. I don't think it's something that if you go ahead up and if you remove over the course of a winter, you go ahead and take, you know, four or five coyotes out, I don't think that that's going to be something that's going to translate, you know, necessarily into a population boom of coyotes. The ones that are left, yeah, they may do a little better. So you gotta be consistent with the pressure. But still, it's gonna be limited by the amount of space you have here and the food resources. It's not growing infinitely. They're gonna have those buffers around them.
So, okay, yes. Thank you. Cecil.
What do you know about hunting coyotes with dogs?
Yeah. I have not been involved with hunting coyotes with dogs. I mean, it's certainly something that can be done. There's just not many really people that do it. It's something that is an option. But in fact, it's done. I would say the only place where I saw that done probably most was in Washington County, and the dogs are collared. And what they would do is they would run them down the peninsula. As you go along Route 1, there'd be a peninsula that would go down 4 or 5 miles, and be able to run those dogs down, and they'd have radio telemetry. They'd be able to find out where they are, and then they could focus, they could position hunters on where those animals were going to expect them to come out. It was something that does happen, but it requires dogs, it requires trained dogs. There's fewer and fewer people that do that. Generally, you're going to have telemetry equipment as well. And there's problems sometimes in places where there are a lot of homes and people having dogs running all around. We see it with bear hounds. Most bear people that hunt with bear dogs are not going to go into developed towns because they don't want to have to deal with dogs running through people's backyards. They're going to go to more undeveloped areas. So that's some limitations of it. But it has been done and successfully in some places. But it's just very difficult to exert that type of pressure, I think, here on your island. It wouldn't be the best setting for it.
Elvin, I see you, John.
I don't recall ever hearing anybody talking about coyotes here on Chebig until maybe sometime earlier this summer. Doesn't mean that people weren't talking about it or afraid about it, but I just personally never heard anybody mention the fact that there might be such animals on the island. And then about 2 or 3 months ago, everybody was talking about them. They're eating my chickens, they're doing this, that. I'm hearing them screaming in the middle of the night. And exactly at that same time, when I begin to hear these reports from people who have chickens and so on, my dog became unwilling to step out of our house at night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now here's a dog who every other night in her 10 years of life, when it gets time in the early evening to go outside to do her business,
right.
You just step out and go out and run around sure. in the art and your business. Yeah. All of a sudden, she's scared crazy about something else.
Sure.
And what could it be? What explains this?
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, dogs are very perceptive. Their senses are far superior to ours, and I think it's quite likely, sure, they maybe suspect something out there. Often they may have had a negative experience or a close encounter and then kind of remember that and are less, and they're going to be more aware of that when they're going outside. So, yes, I've seen that. People that have had issues with bears coming into to people's backyards and, you know, dogs tied up on a leash or something to a doghouse. And there's been close calls with the dogs. The dog seems to get aware of that and a little nervous about going out again.
Just their instinct.
Sure.
Or their sense of smell, maybe.
Right, right.
Thanks.
Yes.
There was a question back here. Go ahead.
It sort of works off the Board of Selectmen and the children. I currently live in North Carolina. I'm moving home today. We last year, in the springtime, had two little girls, 7 and 9, attacked by coyote. And not being able to find the animal, these children had to go through all the rabies shots and all these kind of things.
And ma'am, I don't want to interrupt, but where did that occur, in North Carolina or here?
North Carolina.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yes.
Just maybe 20 minutes outside Winston-Salem.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is that we all know that there's coyote here and we have a child attacked. Are we going to have issues for the town of Chebec and the Board of Selectmen? Are there legal ramifications? Is this going to cause trouble down the road?
Are they taking any action down there that you know
of? I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. Do you have any sense about our town's liability? I don't think there probably is any.
Wild animals, they're wild range animals. They range throughout the state. There's no liability for a wild animal and, you know, what it would do. I mean, if let's say you have a vehicle collision, let's say someone goes out and tragically hits a moose going on over in Porter or something like that, Parsonsfield, they hit a moose, do significant damage to their car, potentially someone dies from that. I mean, it's tragic when that happens, and it's an example of what can happen when we live in proximity to wildlife. But there's no, there wouldn't be any financial liability to a town or whoever managed the road. No.
Okay. Hi, David.
Welcome to my world.
Okay, Chuck had a question. He's been had his hand up.
It's not so much a question. I just want to let people know. I've been hunting these guys for 2 years. I've come across 4 of them in the woods. And every single time I even got anywhere close to them, they turn and ran. They have nothing to do with us unless they're starving or hungry. They don't want anything to do with us. In Beverly's case, I've lost 2 cats. I had 1 climbing a lobster trap. Luckily, 2 weeks later, I heard her crying and I was able to go find her. She was skin and bones, but I was able to save her. I lost another one up in Auburn in a garage. Somebody closed the garage and moved away. Came back a month later and found my cat dead in the garage. So I don't want everyone thinking that all the cats and stuff that's out here that are dying, not all the coyotes. I understand that everyone's concerned about that, but I really don't believe that all the cats that have disappeared out here are from the coyotes.
No, and I'm not saying it is. There's just a lot of garages.
All these people leave for the summertime, and they close up their houses and their garages, and they leave for the winter, and it very well could be a cat inside one of the garages or something. So I just want to let you guys a little, at ease that I've been around them. I've seen them. I've seen a fisher on the island down by Mark Olson's house. It was very big. It was about 2.5 feet long, soaking wet. It just came out of Mr. Wilson's pond. So I just don't want you guys to do like he said. Don't not walk your dog and don't go out there because they don't really want anything to do with us. They want to do with food and taking care of themselves in their territory. And that's just my opinion, but that's what I've seen in 2 years. I don't know.
So we're trying to get this gentleman to the 8 o'clock boat. I see 2 more hands, and I'm going to call it there unless there's more questions from the board. Go ahead, Jackie.
I don't have a question, but rather a suggestion. Since we have a good turnout, although many people have left, and my suggestion is asking the question of how many people would like to see further. The selectmen address this further.
I think we got that answer.
Okay.
When everybody clapped when Jane said it. Mary?
Have you had any reports of bears swimming out to us.
Yeah, they're called seals. Seals are bears. Yeah.
I have
seen a moose on an island.
Bears are very good swimmers, and moose, yes, I have seen. I have seen moose out on Outer Green Island. We saw a moose. We were out there once doing some bird surveys, and there was a moose swimming straight out right the wrong direction. And we had to tweak change our whole plans, and we said, well, we're not going to let this thing go out there, man. It's doomed. So we took our boat and just kind of corralled it, a little rodeo. We had two boats, and we just kind of corralled it back and back towards this direction. So, yeah, those moose will definitely swim many, many miles. And bear, yeah, they can swim long distances. You wouldn't think so. I would say less frequently, just because the population of bears as you get onto the coastal plain does go down. We certainly have them in any of the towns, Wells, Scarborough. They all have bears, but there's definitely fewer of them. You're in the peripheral part of the bear range, so it's not as likely those animals are going to have to go elsewhere to find home range, because there's going to be enough here. They're not by any means saturated here, and they have fairly large territories as well. So they don't seem to be exploiting these islands as much. In fact, I'm not aware of a bear that has really been a resident on the island. They may visit them, but I don't think they really hang out there for long distance.
Lions and tigers, though. I'm going to ask if there's any further questions from the board
right
for Scott.
Yeah, go ahead. What is the process? Say somebody does have traps and they do want to trap. How do they? What kind of permission do they need to put traps out in the woods? Do they have to go to the landowner?
They do.
Okay.
Or if it's town-owned land, they get it from the town. If it's a landowner, then they get permission. I think technically the way the law works currently, it can be just verbal permission is sufficient. I always recommend people go with written permission and just have that copy of that written permission on your person, so in case anyone does ask for it. But yes, all they need is permission to do so.
And as a follow-up, if in fact we did have somebody who came and trapped, should we publicize that so that people stay away from that area? Because that was a concern. I know someone who does trap and does have traps, and their concern was they didn't want to catch somebody's dog.
Sure.
And if people let their dogs run around here, that could happen.
Yep. The advantage of posting it to some extent, I mean, not to say I've got a trap right here, or I'm not going to flag it with an orange tape or something, but I mean, I've set traps in places where people do recreate, and my opinion of it is best to what we would do is at the trailhead. Again, this was not a hiking trail I was talking about earlier. It was a wilderness area. It was a canoe camping area. People weren't really walking trails, but we put it at the access points. We said there is trapping taking place here, and people were aware of it, and they did just know. You know, naturally, they probably have their dogs, keep an eye on their dogs if they had dogs. The disadvantage of potentially notifying people is that there will be some people, small minority of people, that will see it as an opportunity to go out and to tamper with those traps because they don't agree with it. And they'll go and potentially, which is illegal, they'll step on all the traps. They'll sometimes pull them out, steal them. So sometimes that happens. But I would think that the benefits of a general posting is going to be preferable to being kind of furtive about it and just letting people know, yeah, there's something going on there, and you know what, there's nothing wrong with that. We can justify it. There's nothing that anyone should be ashamed of putting the traps out. So I think it's good to let people know that in this general area, this is an area which we're going to be trapping. And if you're just walking through, this has zero impact on you. If you're walking through with your dog, yeah, I mean, it's something you just want to keep your dog on a close leash. And if the dog ever did get caught, it's good to know, how to release that trap as well. That's certainly something that...
Scott, where can you purchase pepper spray?
Any Cabela's, any hardware store generally is going to have it. Camping supply store.
Amazon.
After, now, some of those with the sprays, I'm not sure if they're... I know when I was traveling around with it, I had a can I never used, and it was like... It was like $50 for that big stuff, the counter assault, the big can like this. There's smaller ones that are less. I got the big one. I wanted to make sure I wouldn't run out. So I got the big one. And sometimes there was restrictions on air travel. I wasn't able to send that. I wasn't able to put it on packed luggage or anything. And I don't even think I can. There may be problems even with shipping it through the mail. I'm not sure what the restriction is in that now. So usually I bought it in a particular place where I'm working. But yeah, any outdoor supply store should have it.
It's a big can.
There are some that are small. Yeah, I get one like this. Yeah, I gave one. I got one for my wife. I just gave it to her because she goes out and there's a couple of people that have moved in and I guess they think it's okay to let your dog just run all around and run down the road and chase everybody. And I said, well, you know, I shouldn't have to. If the dog's jumping up on you, then go ahead and Right.
All right, we need to get this gentleman to the boat.
Thank you.
Scott, I want to thank you for giving everybody a really thorough answer. That was a wonderful session.
Excellent. My pleasure. And you can follow up with me. I'll leave my contact information.